Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? You know, it's a Wednesday, and I'm Citizen Payne. This is K's Son and Friends. You've reached us on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And, yeah, we got that's Bob Marley, of course, song War. He quoted the Emperor Haile Selassie in the beginning of that song. And, boy, do we got a lot to talk about, brothers and sisters and everybody else. Animals, everybody, atmosphere, because there's a whole lot of stuff. I saw somebody on TV, one of the talking heads, a guy that has an organization, a veteran guy, and he said he calls Donald Trump President Mayhem. A lot of you guys seen those insurance commercials with the character Mayhem. Anything could happen, causing mayhem. And that's who this dude is. He got books coming out left and right about him. He's insulting people. He's got fantasies about firing Obama. He's crazy, and he doesn't seem I mean, most reasonable people probably have already assumed, but if they haven't, that this guy is not quite right. Right? I mean, when I heard about him hiring a faux Obama. And I hope that brother got paid a lot of money to do that because, you know, come on, man. But he hired a faux Obama to sit there while he berated him and really gave him a critique on the job he was doing. And this was supposed to be after the first term. And from what my understanding is that it was supposed to, he wanted it to air at the Republican National Convention when Mitt Romney was running against Obama. And it's just... You know, each subsequent story you hear about the guy is some. It seems to get stranger and stranger, and the more he talks, the more that you realize there's something, not only something wrong, but clearly is a criminal perspective, no empathy, all of that stuff. But you know, anybody who was aware of Donald Trump before he became president, I'm sure that you have to be shocked at all of the craziness that this guy is doing. And also, you know the criminal activity that he's doing. And we're insulting military people. I know Byron has got a mouthful for that, being that his son is in the military. My grandmother's brother, I never knew him because he died, not in World War II, maybe, or maybe Korea. My uncle Bud, my mother's brother, served. My Uncle John, my father's mother's brother, served. I have cousins who have served. I have a first cousin on my father's side who served. He's since passed, not in the from military service, just, you know, from natural causes. And for me personally, many of you know that I'm an actor. I play usually cops and military people. And I had that mentality. I could have been a person in the service. I went in the ROTC. The only reason I didn't join afterwards is because my acting career, I didn't want to have my time taken. I needed to be free. And even when I graduated college, I thought about joining the National Guard because you learn some cool stuff in the military and in the police force. You learn some really cool things, very interesting things. And I just think anybody, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm down with the country. And regardless of what I might agree, you've heard me before talk about John McCain, but what I might think about someone's politics, first I give them their props for going to war, regardless of whether you've heard me say, probably if you listen to some episodes, that I think they were fighting for white supremacy. Okay. But that's, for this particular point, neither here nor there. If someone's willing to go lay their life on the line and get shot at, in McCain's case, get shot down and become a prisoner of war, regardless of our politics, you got to respect that. And what I don't understand is every time he would disrespect John McCain to a reporter when he first did it, he did it years ago, and I guess in the 90s or whatever, but also the most recent time when we see him, he was getting ready to run for president, and the pollster, Republican pollster, Frank Lutz, was talking to him, interviewing him, and that's when he dissed John McCain, talking about he got captured, that was a loser, I like people who win, whatever. But, you know, the crazy thing to me is that none of these people, when he said these things, would say, well, the follow-up question to me would have been, well, did you serve? Where did you serve? And that's how you shut all that down. I'll give you a perfect example, right? Totally different. He used to, from time to time, go on the David Letterman show back in the day when Dave Letterman was on the Late Show, right? One time he goes on Dave Letterman, and he's talking about Obama, whatever, and then he says, you know, he's talking about these shirts he has. He produces, that got shirts, and he was doing clothing, and he, his greatest shirt, the silk, filled that. And talking about Obama, we need to do this, and Dave was, let me see the shirt. He's looking at it, oh, yeah, it's nice. So it's here, made in China. He totally just shut Trump down, made him look like an idiot, because all the stuff he was talking, Dave just went cut straight through it and revealed him as a liar. And that's what I don't see enough, and I've been saying this for a long time, I don't see that enough in many of these people in the media. You know, like I've said before, and the guys will tell you, that, you know, he calls, people have been calling it untruths, misspoke, all of this stuff. He's a liar, and it's bizarre to me that people can't just see it. When I see the man talking, you can see him making stuff up as he's going along, and there's people going to believe him regardless. There's people that don't care whether he's lying because he's doing exactly what they want to do. But for the individuals who might be in between, to realize that not only is this guy a liar, but that he does not have anything in store for you other than as you can serve him, is unbelievable to me. And something that I said a long time ago that was recently revealed, if you watched Rachel interview Michael Cohen last night, and the fellas will vouch for this, you can listen to other episodes, I believe it's when my mom was still living, was that he did not want to be president. He was running to improve his brand. And I peeped that as soon as he came out that night and took the walk out. If you look at the expression on his face, go look at old news footage, he's got the expression. I was like, oh, shoot, I won. And exactly like I said, Michael Cohen admitted that. Besides all of the other stuff that we already knew, he's a racist, he hates black people, and all of this stuff that pretty much all of us already knew. And certainly Wayne will attest to, because he's been a newsman for all these years and is very familiar with Donald Trump. So let's bring in the fellas. I'm going to bring in Byron Saunders first. Brother Byron Saunders, how you doing this evening, my brother?
Well, I'm blessed and highly favored. Thank you so very much. You know, I'm down here in Washington, D.C. I did get married last weekend.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I jumped the broom. I mean, it's beautiful, beautiful story. But I'm still here in the cesspool that we call Washington, D.C. Now, here's some totals that I think we need to be very conscious of. It's September the 9th, we're after Labor Day, and the dead in this country from the pandemic is 193,025. 193,025. Citizen Payne, Eric Payne, my God. We got 6.430 million infected. The question still remains. And, oh, yes, and let's not forget, they keep saying the job market is getting better, but since the pandemic, over 62 million people have filed for unemployment. So don't get sucked in by the 8% unemployment rate. The better figure is to know, since this has started, how many have filed for unemployment. And there's unemployment scams all 50 states. People can't get their money. States are late. And you still trust this individual to be your leader? I think there's something wrong with your brain if you're going to go down this road. Let's just call it what it is. You got a mental illness. Because you're following someone who's killing you. Now, I can't put
That's
it
right.
more clearer than that. I don't know what else to tell you, folks. Okay? So Eric, Wade, y'all want to opine on this? Because there's a pandemic
yeah.
of mental cases out there.
Yeah, let's get Wayne in there because I know he wants to jump in here too. I'm sure he's jumping at the butt. I'm opening your mic, Wayne. Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary historian who was very familiar with Donald Trump. What say you on just before as we get into all these topics? But what's your overall since we spoke last, Wayne? Perspective.
I mean, I tell you, to be honest with you, there's really nothing new. I watched that Rachel Maddow interview last night. I thought she did an excellent job. And a lot came out of it that was probably things that most of us had speculated. But I think the Bob Woodruff book that came out today, where he admits that he lied to the American people, which is something that we knew, but for him to admit it, you know, it just says something about how warped his intelligence is. You know, they're always questioning Biden's intellect in his late 70s. Is he capable of handling the mantle of carrying the mantle into the White House at this point? But the problem is that we're dealing with a bona fide criminal, and it seems like his base still wants to see him in another 4 more years, and he's talking 12. You know, I mean, it just baffles me. But I think one thing that comes to mind every time I think about the fact that perhaps there's a chance, I mean, there's still a chance that he may get in, it says a lot about some of the surveys that have been done, and it reflects the intelligence of the average American person. They always come up with this category where, you know, they're mostly whites with no college background, very little education. They seem to be behind him. They seem to want to continue a tradition that is a throwback to to the 50s with Jim Crow and all that. And it's really pathetic, but at the same time, these people, and I've heard you, Eric, from time to time, always make reference to the segment that not David Letterman, Jay Leno used to do with asking the men in the street interviews and asking the average American if they knew who the president was, vice president, how many members of the House, how many members of the Senate, you know, where is the Capitol, things like that. And there were so many people who just did not know. And I think this is the sad part that we're dealing with. I mean, and that YouTube segment that comes up all the time with Letterman and Trump, you know, he put him in his place. And to me, that should be part of someone's TV commercial package for the campaign, because he said this before he even thought about, you know, running for the presidency. Or he was on the precipice of making a decision. And, you know, I miss David Letterman. Not to say that Colbert is not good, but I tell a lot of people not to sidetrack. Letterman's a great guy, man. He's given, I know, two people that he gave a free ride to an HBCU. And, you know, he's very humble. He doesn't come out and talk his talk about what he's done. But, you know, his voice and his presence is missed as a broadcaster. But that aside,
absolutely.
you know, Trump is a, you know, I don't know what more to say. I'm tired of even getting down to his level about even wanting to call him a name. You know, we got to get out and vote, man. And I just got a notice in the mail today, the Westchester County Board of Elections sending out information now. If you want an absentee ballot, if you want to vote tomorrow, there are places that you can vote tomorrow. And as long as you're registered Democrat or Republican, you know, you can go out and cast the ballot. We hope, we beg that you vote Democratic. But the bottom line is that we need to get this thing, because he has covered all his bases. All sorts of machinations are at play.
Right.
I think I've dominated enough right now.
No, that's all right. I was going to say that, in particular, the Bob Woodward interview, not only does he talk about concealing, he talks about, he admits that he knew the true depth of the virus, but also he talked about, obviously, when Woodward tried to ask him, don't you feel that we've been privileged as white Americans that at least understand the pain and frustration and anger of black people? He's like, no, you've really been drinking the Kool-Aid. So it proves, and just like Cohen said the night before, he said he's a racist. He doesn't like black people. You know, riding through Chicago in a black neighborhood, he said only blacks could think like this. And so, but the virus is the real interesting thing, because, you know, you could see a president downplaying because, you know, you don't want people to panic, but you sure shouldn't have given them the information. What I find really despicable is that, yeah, you didn't want them to panic, but then you went completely the other way. Not only did you do that, but then you belittled people who tried to protect themselves. That's the despicable thing. When people try to, you know, start wearing masks and things like that, you made people feel bad about buying into it as if it was a hoax. And they actually did at times, right? Say it was a hoax about the virus. There's footage out there that he calls it a hoax, the effect of it. So this is, you know, that's particularly despicable because you knew how deadly it was. You even said it was airborne. And then you come out and tell the, and that night or the very next day say the same thing. And the individuals who choose to still support him, there's no doubts about it. You're racist. And unfortunately, a lot of these people who are really poor that support him, they're getting pimped. And they're going back to the old ways of well, at least you can say you're still a white man in America, and at least you're still better than black people. And if that's all you got, that's not saying much, because we're getting pretty, you know, we get pretty, you know, dumped on in this country. So you want that as a measuring stick? You know, so we have to really question, you know, some of the, I mean, there is true ignorance in this country. And I, you know, we've talked about it within the last couple of weeks about, yeah, let's put a poll tax. Let's put an intelligence test before, because some of these people that support him, they should be asked if they know the basics about voting and elections, civics, the basics about civics. And if you can't pass that test, then you don't need to vote, because this is ridiculous. I mean, it goes beyond Republican and Democrat. I mean, when you start doing things that could potentially put your own life in jeopardy, and you're still going with an individual to do that, that means there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. Either you have a death wish, if your vibe is like, or a kamikaze perspective, is your vibe is, I don't care if I screw up myself, just as long as I screw up those people over there, then you got a problem. You're obsessed. You're obsessed with people that threaten you merely by their presence. That's why I've said, surely we must be the image of God if my image causes you to lose your mind like that. Causes you not to be able to just function. I mean, you guys have both seen it, how some people, some, not all, some white men stiffen up if they're in your presence. Like, for, I'll give you a very simple example. Apartment building I used to live in, walking down the street, I'm walking down the hallway, I see a young lady that lived in the building that I knew, but she was walking down holding her hand of her boyfriend, both white, and I could see his body stiffen up a little bit, wanting to stand taller, you know, because of whatever. I don't, you know, my presence, because I look like the image of God. It must be that.
because I've done nothing, said nothing to you, but my presence, my mere presence, causes you to go through these changes. And now the fact that this man has disrespected someone like John McCain, disrespected John Kelly's son to his face, you know, disrespected all of these important, I mean, these heroes, these are American heroes. And you know what? The average, the ones he said that the military, the rank and file like me, those are the same people, rank and file, are working class people usually, right? Those are working class Americans. And to denigrate their sacrifice, to denigrate anybody, like I said, they pick up a gun and are willing to go put their life on the line and potentially get shot at, you got to respect that, man. And it's unbelievable that still with that, they still support him. So it tells you, like Anna DuVernay put on put a post up, and she, and in that post it was white supremacy above democracy, white supremacy above empathy, white supremacy above the economy, white supremacy above the environment, white supremacy above national security. All of these things, just as long as they could have their power. It's unbelievable that people would really go for this. And the fact that this guy made a video of him firing a faux Obama, what's wrong with this guy? There's something wrong with him.
Yeah, I think that was blackface, personally. I don't want to think.
No, I think I saw a picture of the guy. It was a black guy. You never see his face,
boy.
But I saw the still that someone posted on the internet on Twitter or something. But you know, we're clearly not a monolithic group, because all you got to do is go on Facebook or Instagram and you'll see a number of black people at RNC. You'll see a number of black people that stand up there and rah-rah for this man and are willing to stand up there and call Black Lives Matter a terrorist organization as black people. I'm like, what? You know, or show up to a rally on the weekend that your ancestors were set free? Really? They didn't even mention, from what I understand, and I didn't watch the RNC, but from what I'm seeing on some blurbs on the internet, they never even mentioned Herman Cain at the RNC. I don't know if you guys watched the whole convention.
I watched a lot of it. No.
They didn't even mention, we want to say, you know, our family goes, our hearts go out to, didn't never mention the guy. He was a presidential candidate in the primary for them. It's unbelievable. They are, you know, I mean, you know, it's a slave master mentality, and this guy clearly doesn't care about us, but he doesn't care about anybody else other than himself. I mean, and we're talking about, you know, him and Putin. He wants to be, you said, another 12 years. It said, you remember, Cohen said he wants to be president for life. And think it's a joke. It's not a joke, you know. I mean, since he got in there, I guess he's going to try to run the table with it. And the biggest drawback, the biggest unbelievable thing is all these people who enable him, who are willing to lie for him. John Kelly, when he was willing to lie for him, and if you're saying that somebody's got to have an adult in the room or whatever, but I remember when John Kelly lied about the black congresswoman when Trump went down, when they had the issue of the black servicemen in Florida being killed. And John Kelly got up and made up some story that this Frederica, I forget her last name, she's a black congresswoman from down there, made up a lie about her that she said, and it was totally debunked because she wasn't even there, or something came out where it totally debunked it. So, you know, it's unfortunate that you lost a son in the war and this guy insulted you, but you're rolling with him. You know what I'm saying? You're condoning this guy.
Guilt by association.
Exactly. You know, Byron, what do you think about of that particular? Since you have a son in the service, that particular issue of denigrating the military.
It's both unpatriotic, and like Joe Biden says, "Who the hell do you think you are?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where did you get off disparaging our young men and women who put their lives on the line, bone spurs and all? Doesn't matter. They signed up. They want to be a part of the American force. And then you basically put them up on a firing squad and just say, go at it. I hope the military that are out there serving recognize and realize their commander-in-chief has pus on his brain. Okay? He will endanger you. And you need to know that 50% of the homeless people in America are veterans. 50%. You can't afford to continue to back someone like this who continues to put life, your life, in jeopardy, no matter what. There's over half a million kids right now in this country who are infected with COVID-19 because they went to school too damn soon, which means that the figures that I gave you this evening, primarily those of the pandemic, understanding that by the time we get to the election, there will be 200,000 people dead in this country from COVID. It is his responsibility. That's murder. You're talking about killing somebody down on Fifth Avenue and nobody arresting you. He's got 200,000 people dead. What more do you need to understand? This is a rogue, a pathetic grifter.
Say it.
So you know, the overwhelming putrid and stench of corruption, collusion, cronyism that has engulfed the Oval Office, you know what you got to do on November 3rd? Flush the turds on November 3rd. You can dump this stuff into the Potomac and forever send them off on a slow boat to China if they like to enjoy their trip and stop over in Moscow. But you know what? You're not going to even be able to leave the country, because the end game to this scenario has been played out in movie after movie after movie. And if you think you can change history by standing in the way of it, you're going to get rolled over, my friend. The inevitability. Yeah. It's an inevitability. And here's the other thing that's an inevitability. And when President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris step in and take charge, they will have to deal with the issue of guns in this country. Because when you start allowing militias, unauthorized militias, to storm your capitals because they can't wear a mask and they show up with weapons, and then you bypass a 17-year-old with an AK-15 walking down the middle of the street because you can't determine good guys from bad guys. But he looks like a good guy, so let's give him a high five. And the fact that he's 17 and crossed the state line illegally with a weapon that you allowed across the borders, you think there's a problem? There's no problem with policing? You can't even tell the good guys from the bad guys.
Sad.
That's how bad it is.
Sad. I agree. I mean, I think that should be the top, you know, living in the outskirts of the city and just seeing what's going on, you know, just watching the news on a daily basis, the volumes of shootings that have come up here in New York, you know, is almost, I'm not saying it's almost to the point like Chicago, but I tell you, it just gives one a moment to pause and think about, you know, the fact that you may be leaving your house and you may not come in the way you left. It's just unfortunate. And there are plenty of factors with this. I mean, I admit that they had to release some people from the prisons because of the COVID situation. But I also felt that it could have been handled a lot differently, where you're not going to put everybody's life at risk. But again, it just goes back to what you were saying earlier, Eric, that, you know, the man politicized this issue of wearing a mask. He knew full well, you know, what he was playing with, and he saw an opportunity to say, well, this plays into my game of divide and conquer. You know, everyone who's not wearing a mask would be my people, you know, and I have to empower them to make them feel that it's totally okay to do this, you know, in spite of what the experts are saying about the impact of this virus. And for him to just, you know, matter-of-factly, blithely unaware of the, acting like he was blithely unaware of the impact, you know, it just astounds me, and it astounds me that I could go up and down the Hudson and friends of mine in other parts of the country who are listening to the program, and they say that, you know, I see these boats on the Mississippi, I see them in Lake Michigan, you know, and you know, I don't understand how these people come out and support Trump. I really don't.
You mean the boats with his flags and people riding?
Yeah, with the flag. Yeah. I have a friend of the show. He probably is listening tonight. He's at the very top of the Mississippi River in the Midwest. And, you know, the deal is they're up and down, you know, that waterway. I have family in Michigan, and they're on Lake Michigan, you know, which is a swing state. I just hope it swings in our direction. And I hear in Florida the same thing, you know. I mean, it just saddens me.
They know about that boat sinking.
Yeah. You know.
You know. God don't like ugly. Let me ask you really quickly. I've got a you know, I've been wondering. I was like, wow. And you just broke it down for me, you know, why all the shootings. And I forgot about that they let, you know, supposedly nonviolent offenders or a lot of people out of jail. I don't think maybe some of those are the ones that might be doing the shooting or whatever. But it just seems so convenient that all of these shootings are going on. It seems so convenient that all of these guns are on the street, right? So I'm wondering, and we already know, and anybody from Chicago can tell you that, it's not the black people bringing the guns into Chicago, you know, that there's kind of an underground thing going on to ship guns, funnel guns, to the streets of Chicago. Just like in many of the protests, it wasn't the majority of the protests. The protesters are protesting for Black Lives Matter. The majority of those protests were peaceful. And it was the undercover supremacists that were blending in, like they busted that cop breaking windows. I guess it was in Minnesota initially with all black on. And they're trying to make their myth of Antifa come alive and make their myth of Black Lives Matter being terrorists come alive by infiltrating and perpetuating these acts of violence and you know, destruction, acting as if it's the protesters. And so it caused me to wonder, like, wow, it's really convenient that in a lot of cities there's so many shootings going on, so many guns all of a sudden. Everybody's shooting at each other. And I know a lot of it is, you know, police being pulled back and their tactic. Obviously, they heard they're not going to respond as much to some calls, right? Police union and lay low. But it won't be the first time that there have been a lot of coincidences in America that seem to work out in a certain way, right? Another coincidence is that the Justice Department is deciding to defend Trump against the woman who accused him of raping him. And you have other past justice officials saying it's crazy. It's crazy because he made a statement about it.
Notice the amount of negative stories against Trump that are in slow motion right now. It's not slow motion, but in slow motion.
Day after day, exactly.
We are getting the drip of even more of his heinous crimes. I knew this was going to be the case because, like I said earlier, the Democrats have got to control the medium. If they allow Trump to go into rah-rah-rah land, he will outdo them. But revelations of all revelations, Trump's campaign committee has blown through his $1 billion of his campaign funds.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
He is.
Yeah.
He is short on money right now. And this is where you're going to see the next however 60 days, 50 days, whatever it is, you're going to see more and more anti-Trump commercials blasting everywhere but Fox. And I'm telling you, the dam is about to break because it was, they've been waiting for Labor Day to happen. Now, Labor Day happened. We're off and running. We've got fires in the West that are choking the California market, and you've got hurricane season engaging in the Caribbean. You've got a pandemic that is about to spike again as a result of Labor Day outings and people not following protocols, as it's been indicated from that event up in South Dakota, the bikers event. They're starting to show up. After 2 weeks of anything, you can be guaranteed if they were congregating without putting into place the medical protocols as required by CDC, you're going to see an increase in those deaths. And the statistics are bearing the fruit by the science, not by the hype and the media of all the other stuff that they want to run on the games, that they, the three-card Monte game that they're playing. But the statistics of the medical and science are not lying. Those
That's
are the
true.
Things that are going to change the public's mind. It's a slow drip, guys. You're not going to change it automatically. But if you keep losing people and deaths of children and colleges are forced to shut down and industries being faced with another flu season where they're already telling you, get the flu shot now. Don't even wait. They're pushing it. They're pushing it like it's no tomorrow. And do you really want to be in line to take more than one shot for a pandemic of COVID-19? I'm asking you guys, are you ready to stand in line for more than one shot?
I'm not ready to stand in line for any shots. I don't trust the flu shot. I did a play called Miss Ever. I did Miss Ever's Boys as a play.
Yeah.
I don't trust the flu shots. You know, so you know, I don't trust them. And talking about that, I'm sure you guys seen on the news where some people were having adverse reactions. A woman in the UK had like a whole nervous thing going on to some
suffered
of the vaccine
MS.
Trials. And that's another thing. This guy's trying to promise a vaccine by, I don't know, it might be a day right close to an important day. You know what that is. I don't know how anybody could sit in a room and listen to this moron. But anyway, and vaccine makers, the nine major companies said, no, we're going to make sure that everything is safe. And just the fact that news came out, that a couple of people had adverse reactions, it kills that whole idea. I mean, the director of the NIH today in that Senate hearing, as well as the Surgeon General, they both said, the NIH guy said, I'm not going to have anything to do with it if we're trying to put it out before it's ready. He said, I won't be a part of it. So they're both, you know, maybe all of these people that have been following the emperor can grow a pair and try to stand up to this guy, at least for the good of the country, at least to keep people from dying. My God, it's crazy. It's crazy. But I got a special thing I want to ask you guys about his whole notion or his pitch about the suburbs. You know, low-income people, the suburbs are going to be overrun. Because I'm sure, Wayne, you live in the suburbs. I live in the suburbs. Byron, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you live in a suburban part of D.C. And it caused me to think that they try to paint a picture of what these low-income people are like. Obviously, they're trying to say they're black. We know he wants to just come out and say it. But I also thought about it's a mentality, isn't it? A low income is not, and I think we might have touched briefly on this before, but to me, low income, there's a whole mentality. They try to paint a whole picture of a physical person. But when you have been in low income areas, or around people who might not have had the best opportunities that people in the suburbs had, there is a mentality, right? Some people are hood, some people are street. There is a mentality that causes certain blacks not to want to identify with a certain code of behavior. that causes some blacks to want to go so extreme that they're in the Republican Party, want 4 more years, and talk about how Black Lives Matter is full of it and a terrorist organization. And there is a kind of mentality, a ghettoization of a mentality that sometimes goes along with it, that I think even us and with our own group shun away from that, you know? And sometimes we have to remind ourselves. Go ahead, you guys. I got you guys thinking. Go ahead.
Yeah. I often hear an expression from time to time, you know, that, you know, they're black people and then they're niggas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to use the word. And
which
it's
is usually Caucasians pushing it.
Yeah, well, not only that, but, I mean, the deal is, it's just that, you know, we have a lot of healing to do in our own community, whether, you know, they live in the burbs or live in a city. A lot of us left the city because, A, the violence at one point. You know, I remember some of the things that I used to go through as a kid. And secondly, you know, I'd rather be in a more relaxed environment where I don't have to put up with some of the things that I used to because my family couldn't do any better. Now it's socioeconomic. City is so expensive, you know. I was once married to someone who was determined to live next door to her employers, and that was CVS at the time. And I said, there is no way I would be paying rent to live next to someone just to say that I could walk a block down 57th Street and just park my behind. She worked for 60 minutes back in the day. And I said, you know, it was one of the reasons, if I may be so open after all these years, as to why we broke up, because, you know, I don't think living next door to my employer or being in the city is going to make me any wealthier or put me on the fast track to success, fame, and fortune than to saving a dollar. You know, maybe it's my Caribbean mentality, how my parents raised me. But I just thought the quality of life in the burbs is better, and to a certain extent it is. And we've arrived. This is what Trump is trying to purport, something that doesn't even exist anymore, except maybe in some of the wealthiest communities. And I've driven through some of the wealthiest communities, and I see, you know, people who look like us. I frequently go into Chappaqua. The Clintons live there. You know, they have black folks up there. Scarsdale, Black Enterprises, Butch Graves and his family, they've been there. You have entertainers around there. I live right around the corner in the Bronx from the childhood home of Denzel Washington. If you check his entertainment, Mundy Lane Entertainment, I'm in that part of the Bronx, Mundy Lane on the border of Mount Vernon. And we have people of quality here, but we also have people, you know, who I think Trump is trying to project as someone looking to undermine the neighborhood. But I've also gone places where there are white folks, and, you know, not to put Pennsylvania down, I have a brother in the Poconos in a gated community, but whenever we've gone out to eat on the outside, I see these bikers, and I know exactly what they're thinking. I told them, I said, you know, you have greater stamina than I to put up with this nonsense, because I wouldn't want to go. I don't care how good the food is. I'm not living. I really don't feel comfortable sitting next to some biker, because I know what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
What were you going to say,
Byron? I put my business out in the street.
What I was going to say was that you have to go back to the 50s and 60s and the question and answer to the question of the history. Remember, there were people who did not like Martin Luther King Jr. for his tactics. They said every time he showed up, they would name him as the outsider. Okay, so we've gone down this road of being identified as being racially profiled, being outsiders, being rabble rousers, being leftists. The most conservative group of people in this country are black people.
Mm-hmm.
Make no mistake about it.
You're right. I've heard that.
All right.
You're right.
And that's a fact.
No,
you know,
I mean,
painted,
you said that.
Painted, that's right, because we are painted stereotypically to be lazy, to be always having babies, illegitimate children, and yet we can't, our numbers can't seem to rise above 30 million for whatever reason, I don't know, but we're always making babies, but our population numbers never seem to rise above a certain level, and this is a census year, and just as of yesterday, the judge declared that you cannot end the census just because you want to end it quickly.
Right.
The count of those people determine congressional dispensing of money based
of money
on
and
numbers.
Funds. But in particular, what the original point that I was trying to make is that the whole suburban aspect, and you bring up a good point, Wayne, it hasn't been like that since the 70s, but it was about, when we moved out of Newark after the uprising, right? Before that, you know, the community I lived in was, you know, was fairly good, you know, working class people. And those that could move once the neighborhood started going down or started having lack of resources, those that could move to the suburbs moved to the suburbs, right? And we've heard the notion, I'm sure you guys heard the notion that the hood became the hood because everybody that was making money moved out of the hood, but because they could and because they were looking for better resources, a better environment for their children and for the future of their family. So it's kind of a backwards thing because the low-income mentality, people beget low income because they've been left behind, because their needs have not been met, because you have created, you've attempted by race to create a permanent underclass, right? To create black and brown people as the permanent underclass. So when you strip away the resources and you force the individuals of those communities that are making money, whose money could bring resources in because of the tax bases and tax that they would pay, when you force those people are forced to leave because the neighborhood is going down and they can get out. But so all the resources are taken out of that area. So it becomes either more low income. And then there's a mentality, a perspective in a lot in certain circumstances or certain individuals, not everybody, because, you know, as we all know, you can go in the hood, you see hardworking people who live there and are normal, but you also have individuals who have chosen a certain lifestyle, you know, whether it be thuggery, whether it be criminal or whatever. But I guess my point is, can you blame people for doing things when they seem to have no hope, when they look at how certain individuals are living and then they listen to what they say as opposed to what they, I mean, you know, if I'm a young, I don't tell young brothers anymore, I wish that they would not sell the drugs. I don't try to call the cops on them unless it's necessary. But how can you tell someone to go along the straight and narrow when you know that a lot of people that are billionaires and claim to be upstanding citizens in this country got the majority of their wealth by illegal tactics, you know? John F. Kennedy's grandfather, whoever, was a bootlegger.
They
built their millions. Trump makes his money illegally. His father was a slumlord. So, you know, wealth in many cases in this country, those people who claim to be upstanding and whatever, but they've become rich through illegal means. So that's kind of can be considered a low income mentality. If what you're suggesting that people are low income, that they have there's a certain mentality that comes with it, as opposed to creating a physical image. Because I know that people thought that of us. Well, but it's also how people carry themselves, you know.
But
I mean, we moved to the suburbs, and we were on equal par, if not better, than a lot of people. And once people got to know the pains, when you knew us, they're like, no. And there's various other people that were blacks of middle class standing that were, in some cases, a little bit more higher socially on a social economic scale or class level, and higher on an income level than some whites that were living in that neighborhood. So, you know, it's just interesting to me, the idea of the low-income people moving in. I'll give you an example. God, I live in a nice neighborhood, a nice community, but it's also a community that brings a lot of people from outside that want to come hang. It's almost as if it's a resort town sometimes. But in that, I find myself going like, who are all these people coming in the neighborhood creating extra traffic? I can't go to the store. And some have a certain mentality, right, that is a little bit, not exactly the way I am. But you guys know what I'm trying to say without saying it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And I find a great amount of interest in how that is used against our people as a whole. And you were getting ready to say, Byron, I think I cut you off, but I just wanted to get that out.
Yeah,
you live in D.C., so I'm sure you see the same kind of,
Absolutely. The reverse gentrification process, we can attribute this ongoing systemic mentality based on the fact that when you build a gated community, what are you really saying anyway?
Mm-hmm.
When you take all the resources out of a community and then expect the city to sustain itself, a.k.a. Detroit, Michigan, because you drained the central business district to build your suburbs surrounding Detroit, you indeed gave up Detroit as too many black people. Oh, what about Flint, Michigan? You still haven't fixed the water. How is it that you can't fix that yet? You can come up with a rush to a vaccine to a virus that you don't even understand.
Right.
So it's a point of which is like that mentality that you speak of is fostered by a systemic system. You have no other choice but to steal from the guy in the corner because he's got the food and you're hungry. You're living in the country that's supposed to have all this wealth. You keep pushing it down our throats from every commercial. Every time I turn something on, you're trying to sell me something that I really don't need, and you keep stuffing our throats with bull. And then you want us to kowtow to you when you're stepping on our necks. Get your knee off of my neck. I don't need you to determine how for me to live. I can live very well and have been doing it for the 402 years that I've been here, sustaining even in the worst of conditions, and yet you still need my help. You can't fix this. And the reason you can't fix it is because you don't have the skill set to fix it. You're lacking in quality, leadership qualities. You don't want to feed the hungry. You don't want to clothe the naked. You don't want to shelter the homeless. You don't want to heal the sick. You don't want to give hope to the hopeless. You want to drain everything out of those individuals that I just said need your help, and you don't give a damn about none of it.
Right. I mean, the wealth is here, and they've never given a damn. And you know what's the interesting thing? I'm sorry, go ahead.
The thing is, this is the wealthiest country on the planet. You know,
right.
I cannot get a stimulus package if I was still living in Trinidad. I cannot get a stimulus package any other part of the world like what we have here. You know,
right.
It saddens me that we're still caught up in this back and forth with the political aspect of it. But, you know, the deal is, if they shared the wealth more, they wouldn't have these problems that we're faced with now. The homelessness, the guns, you know, it just goes on and on. But I still want to feel that the American experiment works.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it gives an opportunity, certainly hope and whatever you might want to call that, a myth or whatever, or how much hope is achievable. But what you mentioned about being around the bikers and other, for lack of a better, poor, not as well-off white people from an economic standpoint. But ironically, you know, people that have been called white trash, quote, white trash, have been those that have been poor, right? So they had a kind of low income mentality, and when you're around individuals who are poor, whether they be white or black, you might find a similarity in that mentality. Like you said, you didn't want the bikers around. You know what they're thinking. That's a certain mentality, isn't it? I mean, so. But what they've done is make it, it's about class, but to identify a certain class, from my perspective, they've been able to say, you know, separate black people and say, that's the class that we don't want. That's the race that we don't want. And so this guy, all he needs to say is the low, a low income, you don't want to turn into a low income and everything that that brings with it. I know somebody that owns a buildings in L.A., and they have Section 8. It's a Section 8 building, right? A couple of properties.
Mm-hmm.
But there is in certain individuals in some of those apartments a certain mentality, hoodish, or what could be considered the stereotypical low-income mentality, that, and they act accordingly. And we, in our community, call it ghetto, call it a hood sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I'm saying, that's more about circumstance and more about the lack of what a society is doing for all of its citizens, as opposed to that being inherent in a certain group or race of people.
And in the history of this country, guys, the history of this country, it has never, ever, ever, never, ever, ever, and I'll say never, ever, ever again, where black people out of the hood, the so-called ghetto, went and destroyed a white community. Never in the history. So that's bull that they're pushing, that we're gonna let the black people into your community and they're coming after you. They have never, ever happened. Now, in the reverse, there's Black Wall Street, there's Tulsa, Oklahoma. You see where I'm going? Because the so-called ghetto riots, the riots, you know, did they burn down their own stuff? No, they didn't own a single piece of that stuff. Don't get it twisted.
Right.
So that when Rosewood was destroyed, when Tulsa, Oklahoma's black community, Black Wall Street, was destroyed.
When Greenwood, North Carolina was destroyed, which they don't even allow to be taking the books out of the library to be talked about.
Yeah, so, I mean, see, that's how you build that false narrative. Because at that point, wow, you think the black people destroyed their own community of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Really? The richest black neighborhood in America? We destroyed it ourselves? Get a grip. That doesn't even make common sense, even for a mentally deranged person.
You're right about that.
So the notion of when people do riot, and you know, the notion is like, why are you burning down buildings in your own neighborhood, right? And that's the frustration, even though it still ends up hurting the individuals there, like, you know, in Baltimore when they had their riots going through that after Freddie Gray and those riots. And they ended up burning down places like a CVS. So you had, you know, senior citizens who couldn't, had to then go across town to the suburbs to fill their prescriptions. So they couldn't get those services. In terms of it never happening, black people going into a suburb community to turn it out, is that because there was always a wall to make sure that wasn't going to happen? Or is that because that's not in our nature? That's the question that, you know, you can debate that a little bit. Man, we done talk so much. It's 90 seconds now. Bruh, we got to do a part two tomorrow. Man, just as we get good. I wish we could have 2 hours, but we only get 1 hour a day, ladies and gentlemen. So, gentlemen, Byron, get the people your send off, man. We're going to do this again tomorrow.
All right.
We got to pop
always,
it off here.
Don't forget, I said peace and love always, my brothers and sisters. Y'all have the power. Use your power and vote wisely. Don't let it sit on the table.
Wise words from a wise man. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Hopefully we'll try to work it out, Brother Byron Saunders, the legendary historian.
All right.
Talk to you again, sir, newly married brother. Talk to you later. Brother Wayne Gilman, the newsman.
Hey, man.
Let the peoples know.
I'm just going to piggyback on what Byron just said a moment ago. We are now in the season. We can vote. I know in New York you can go out and vote. They're coming out with all sorts of locations. Do it before the 3rd if you can. Send in your ballots. You have to go by mail. But please go out and vote.
There it is, from a legendary newsman. Y'all better listen to him because he's seen a lot of elections. All right, Brother Wayne Gilman, we will talk to you
again.
Hopefully tomorrow if we can get together and do it. Take care. This has been Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Kay's son. Those are my friends forever. And I'll just leave you with this, everybody. I saw somewhere it was written, we have done so much with so little for so long, we are now qualified to do anything with nothing. So go out there and vote. Make it happen. We'll see you again. Citizen Payne, Kay's Son and Friends. Here's Chuck D&M.